another Thursday morning has rolled around. It's 11 o'clock. You are tuned to WFVRLP in South Royalton, Vermont. Todd with you. Henry going to be on the line here shortly as he's working on getting our guests lined up. Going to have quite a EV discussion in the second half of the show. Right now, a little music underneath. Solar Awakening, yeah. A lot of our energy could come directly from the sun. That's been known for a really long time. Green Zine is brought to you by, here we go. I see lights flashing here, which means I'm going to hit that button. And I'm going to hit that button. These are legal buttons, by the way, that I'm hitting. Not taking us off the air. Green Zine is brought to you by Solaflect. Yeah, they're the solar tracking company down in Norwich, Vermont. If you want to look them up, just put in Solaflect. Bale under some new leadership over there. Chris Wood is still involved, but he's got a pretty strong team. Really solid community-based nonprofit organization that's also helping out the Chandler, the Herald of Randolph, the White River Valley Herald. Find out more about Bale activities at balevt.org. Heard from Tom Wells this morning during the music show. Thank you, Tom. Royal Trail Works. Daniel Leibowitz down in Washington, a graduate of what then was called the Vermont Law School. Upper Pass Beer Company, the First Branch Coffee Company. Yeah, I don't know which order you're supposed to imbibe those. Solar Fest. And we'll give you the dates of Solarfest. They are live. White Riverland Collaborative and Wit and Grit. Well, as I said, we'll be talking a lot about EVs. We've got some local environmental news, some teasers there. We also will talk about, the 47th President of the United States, the first convicted felon to take the office, made some moves on his first day that will affect the environmental movement. We'll talk about that as well. Right now, we're going to stay awake with Solar Awakening and welcome Henry Swayze to the airwaves. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Todd, and hello, all you listeners.
Yeah, good to have you. I figured you were going to ring up after the show started, but we just put you directly into the system, and it all worked okay.
It did. It's the magic of having done it for over 500 times.
you're actually keeping track. That's good, Henry.
Yeah, I got a wall full of check marks.
Yeah. Not a wall full of checks. Nobody gets paid at this radio station, but you have a wall full of check marks. That I like.
Yes, that's what we get. We get stars and check marks.
We do. All right. Well, we've got our usual selection. I was just playing some good bird music earlier this morning that I really enjoyed. We're going to get to Bird Note in a little bit, but what will we be taking up primarily most of our time in a little bit, Henry?
Well, when we get into our guests, we have Ken Merv, who is the father of someone who's running for the city council up here in Burlington. I met her on the doorstep campaigning, and she said, "You and my father ought to talk." So we'll have Ken on because he has reasonably recently bought an EV, and after using it for only a short while, decided to do a very long trip, and he's going to give us some of his experiences with being excited about an EV and then saying, "Oh my God, what did I do?" And then coming back and saying, "Oh wow, this is good." So, and I have made a recent trip to the garage with my car, and I'm informed that my car is in need of a lot of rust work, or else it won't be inspectable, even though mechanically it's all good.
Yeah.
And so I am hot in the pursuit of a EV for myself while I can still collect the $4,000 used car federal credit before Mr. Trump has vacuumed that up and put it in the dustbin.
Ooh, you don't think he did that already?
Uh-oh. I don't think so yet.
Could be breaking news.
I have a vehicle that I'm hopefully I'm going to pick up Friday or Saturday.
Okay.
That has $4,000 off the sale price.
Gotta like that. So that's a direct discount. That's not based on your taxes. Like you're going to get a $400,000.
It's a direct discount.
Yeah.
If you're buying a new one, it's $7,000.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's good news to hear. So we'll talk more about that. I did read a couple of paragraphs from our guest's blog, some real adventures, and maybe he hit some range anxiety and some other things, and you know, who knows, maybe he kind of learned some things and came out the other end. So we'll look forward to discussing that. And his name again, Henry, is Ken?
Ken Merv.
Ken Merv. Wow. Okay, we'll be talking with Ken Merv in a little bit about
Mervis. I guess he's got an S on the end.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll go with Mervis. Yeah. All right. We're looking forward to that. And I've got some local news here, but why don't we get to, or do you want to talk about the weather? We usually talk about the weather. How about this this rather cold January? Now, I'd looked it up to make sure that traditionally January, by average, is the coldest month of the year in Vermont. And it's kind of living up to that. I mean, we were below zero here a couple of nights. There's another below zero in February. It's right around the corner. And I'm pretty sure, as far as a January thaw or rain, that is not going to happen, at least down here in the Upper White River watershed. A little bit surprising.
Yes, and I think we had more than our share of thaws coming into January.
Yes, we got them out of the way early.
Maybe we had the January thaw in December.
Yeah, I'm still carrying some mud from December, but there hasn't really been any mud during the month of January, and cold temperatures are going to continue, and no major snow activity, at least down country. I know up in...
You know, we've gotten zero, but... Back in the good old days, in the 1970s,
yeah,
it was pretty common for us to get to at least 20 below some night of the winter, and I don't know who the folks in the valley have gotten cold. So you might have had there are probably some people in Tunbridge and South Royalton who had 5 or 8 below, but
yes,
but not the we're still a lot warmer than we used to be.
No, the trends are still there. We just did get through the warmest global year on record in 2024, and I imagine that 2025 will probably compete with last year
lots of good ice skating out there if you want to look up Vermont Nordic Skate, the blog. Lake Champlain has got both sides of the route to Causeway are frozen. You can go in the inland sea and take yourself a 40-mile skate if you want. Do a big loop.
Wow. And I thought the 4-mile loop at Lake Maury was long. 40 miles, Henry. Yeah. We're going to lose you out there. Are you going on that 40-miler? Maybe not.
I'm ricocheting back and forth between Boston trying to collect my car.
Yeah. And I know you're a risk taker, Henry. Do not drive the new EV out on the ice. Please.
Yeah, well, I learned my lesson from the man with the Tesla car that stove in his battery trying to get out on Lake Champlain and watched it burn.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right. On to brighter things. I'm looking at this this beautiful pigeon here on BirdNote.
Yes, and it's all about artificial intelligence. We're really combining the Trump news and the energy news with artificial intelligence soaking up lots of electricity and nature. So let's see. What
you know, when you used a couple of words there together, the current president and artificial intelligence, my mind did not go directly to computers and fast, hopefully accurate information coming back. It kind of went to is someone really very smart or is it pretty artificial? But enough of that. This is not a political show. Let's go to pigeons can correct their
awful temptation.
There is. Pigeons can correct their mistakes like AI. Bird Note here. You are listening to Green Zine at Royalton Community Radio.
This is Bird Note. Birds have to be smart to survive, but their minds often work a little differently than ours. A new study reveals that pigeon brains sometimes operate much like a computer's artificial intelligence. In the study, researchers had pigeons identify different types of shapes, pecking a button to give their answers. If they got it right, they received a treat. The pigeons' powerful desire for food helped them fix their mistakes over time. At the start of the experiment, they averaged just 55% correct, only a smidge better than a wild guess. But by the end, they were scoring 95%, an impressive result for a bird. The researchers think these pigeons aren't learning a general rule they can apply in other situations. In other words, the birds haven't learned their shapes like a human child might. They're just using trial and error so they can choose the response that gets them food in this one situation. That's surprisingly similar to how computers learn how to do a task using artificial intelligence. AI picks up skills without learning general rules, instead just recognizing patterns to predict an answer. Clearly, we still have a lot to learn from bird brains. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Some smart pigeons out there, Henry.
It's pretty interesting. Artificial intelligence, what he's saying, and I haven't researched this to say if he's really right, but that's a pretty interesting concept that artificial intelligence isn't really intelligence. It's just figuring out how to get it right more than wrong. It's kind of learning the way of getting the reward. Mm-hmm. Sounds yeah. And the reason I tied artificial or AI to our president is that he has ballyhooed about becoming the artificial intelligence leader of the world by combining three major companies, getting them to work together to further artificial intelligence. And I think there's no question artificial intelligence will make and is making things more efficient, but Lord knows who's steering it and whether it's steerable. That's
yeah.
My problem with it.
Definitely pretty scary. Hey, while on the federal scene, this story came out last week. I get a weekly submission from the New York Times, a section called Climate Forward. And actually, this just came out on January 21st. And a piece written by Lisa Friedman, three of Trump's most important executive orders on climate. So he signed, I think it was 200 executive orders on the first day of his presidency. And I'm going to just read you a little bit from Lisa's column. On the heels of the hottest year in recorded history, one that brought the planet to a dangerous temperature threshold, President Trump effectively told the world on Monday that the United States is out of the climate fight. And here are some of the examples that she gives. One of the things that he announced was getting out of the Paris Agreement. No, he did that before, and he did it again. Said that he would withdraw with the agreement, that pact among almost all the nations to fight climate change. His move solidifies what most of the world already know. America is an unreliable partner on climate change. Henry, you're not going to like this. He also targeted wind power. And this is classic Trump speak. We aren't going to do the wind thing, he said Monday. Minutes later, he signed a sweeping order that seeks not only to stop new offshore wind lease sales, but also to potentially terminate or amend existing leases. Third, regulating emissions. Buried deep inside Trump's order on unleashing American energy is a directive that would not just end climate regulations, but would also make sure no future administrations could ever curb dangerous emissions from fossil fuels. The order calls on the administrator of the EPA, I have a feeling there's going to be a job opening there, to make a recommendation within 30 days on, quote, the legality and continuing applicability of what has become to known as the endangerment finding. That stems from a 2007 Supreme Court case, Massachusetts versus EPA, in which the court found the agency can regulate greenhouse gas emissions because they qualify as air pollutants. It goes on to talk about some other legal cases after that. So that's a pretty big three right off the bat, right, Henry?
Yeah, he seems to be so much convinced that oil is the answer and that oil is cheap energy. I think he's particularly after wind because it's cheaper than oil as an energy source, probably a lot cheaper in the right location. And he has a bug in his brain about just wanting to make it all about what rich people can get richer on, and not that's the way I see it anyway. And also that he wants to villainize anything that was positive that came out of the last 4 years with the Biden administration and the things that were passed across the aisle, you know, were bipartisan. And I really don't understand where his brain is.
I don't understand. Yeah, not sure you want to.
What's driving this?
So, what I'm just reading that little bit from Lisa Friedman's column in Climate Forward. And once again, if you wanted to search for that New York Times Climate Forward, you could read the entire story. Is the legalities or potentially illegalities or not having the authority to do certain things. And I'm wondering if we could find somebody, a faculty member here on the campus. We do broadcast from the campus of the Vermont Law and Graduate School. Someone who could opine about whether he actually has the power to, let's say, just dump the Inflation Reduction Act, which has a lot of money still to be spent. Whether he can just zero that out or whether there are going to be just ongoing court cases to delay, if not negate, a lot of the actions that he is hoping to take.
I think that is definitely going to happen, and I think there's a lot of donations that are needed to worthy organizations who the president has just dumps money into the lawyer's basket to get himself out of trouble and allow him to do whatever he pleases without regard to law. And I think that it's going to soak up a lot of dollars for us to fight him in that situation.
Yeah. You know, one sort of canary in the coal mine, and a lot of federal agencies are going to be affected by this new administration, is the last time that, the first time that President Trump was elected, the 45th president, and now he's the 47th, the EPA was gutted. A lot of long-term scientists, employees left the EPA, which I think might have been part of the plan, to monitor that and see what's going to happen at these regulatory agencies, whether there is a big decrease, and maybe that's even tied to, of course, this strange phenomenon of the Department of Government Efficiency, which Elon Musk is supposedly heading up.
It's pretty terrifying. He's in a position of power and is taking as much as he can get.
Yep.
I really think we're in trouble as a world and a nation because of him.
Okay, I think we've given him enough airtime. It is 20 minutes past the hour.
EVs.
All right, let's let's bring on our guest. Go ahead.
Okay, hi Ken.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us on Vermont Green Zine.
My pleasure.
So, tell us kind of. I mean, you you've written a very lovely blog. I've already posted that in the notes for the show.
Oh, great.
So people can read that afterwards, and there's more to that blog than the one, I think it's from the tents that triggered.
There's actually 10 years of road tripping. My wife and I, as we got older, love road tripping, and we have taken some epic trips. Our most memorable was the length of the Mississippi from Lake Itasca down to the Gulf.
Mm.
And last year's was from New York City to Key West, driving only on the roads closest to the Atlantic. So we find some fun ones. We've done a circumferential trip around the U.S. We've done a bunch.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like any shortcuts.
I know that shoreline of Maine is about 4 times longer at the coastal zone than it is a little further.
Yeah, I don't think we could do Maine. and I don't think we could have done any of those trips in the EV.
Yeah. Wow.
It would have been they become very different kinds of trips in the EV.
All right. So tell us about your EV experience. That's a frightening concept that trips that you've enjoyed in the past would not be repeatable in an EV.
At least not yet. My old car, I've done all of these 10 years of road tripping in my old 2014 Ford Escape. That has been an absolute gem of an automobile, comfortable and easy and almost no maintenance. But at 160,000 miles and little things starting to break, I decided it's time for a new car. And if I'm going to get a new car, damn it, I'm not going to wait any longer. I don't want to go hybrid. I want to go full EV. So I gritted my teeth and I said, I'm going to do it because once I get a car, I'm going to keep it for a long time. And I went to every dealer that I could find that had EVs, test drove a whole bunch of them, and finally picked the Nissan Ariya, largely because two reasons. The sales guy was terrific, but the real reason is it was, for me and my body in the driver's seat, it was the most comfortable car I test drove. And I wanted comfort more than anything. And it had a decent range, a factory range of 272 miles. So I figured that'll get me some places. And I thought about it. Is it doable? And then I realized, well, that would be a fun blog adventure. Let's see if we can even do it. So our first plan was to drive from northern Vermont, we're in Grand Isle, down to Boston, and then from Boston across, and our plan had been to go all the way to southern Arizona. And then we realized that trip to Arizona was a bit much, so we decided western Nebraska was going to be our target. We have grandchildren and a great-grandbaby in Nebraska. And so we said we're going out for our granddaughter's art show and our grandson's college graduation. We'll make it a trip, and we'll see if we can do it in the EV. So that was our target. Needless to say, we made it.
You made it, but I bet you had some challenges along the way.
Here was the very first challenge. The first challenge was before we left on the trip, we did a shakedown drive. We went to New York City, and instead of driving all the way to New York, we drove to Albany, took the train from Albany, and we knew when we parked at the train station in Albany, we would have to charge before we came back north. And we got back to the train station, and the first charger we found was in a public parking lot that charged us $20 to get in. So then I'm just sort of a pathological cheapskate, so I didn't do that. We found another one, and it was in a pretty sketchy neighborhood. And we charged, and we sat there and charged until we had 100 miles of excess capacity. If the numbers on the dashboard were correct, we'd have 100 miles left when we pulled into our driveway. And I figured, that's a good enough cushion. Let's go. Well, I hadn't thought about it, but we had driven down on the east side of the lake on Route 22, nice flat road, 55, 60 miles an hour, and it was a very warm afternoon. We drove back on Interstate 87, mm-hmm. mountainous, on a very cold night, 12, 14 degrees, and cruising at interstate speed. So we're going 75, 80 miles an hour. By the time we pulled into our driveway, instead of having 100 miles left, we had 20 miles left. And my heart was in my throat. Are we going to make it? So that was one of my first learnings, that speed, terrain, and temperature are huge drains on the battery capacity. I've not owned this one yet through the summer, so I am expecting that not only will I get the factory noted 272 out of the batteries, but I expect it'll be well over 300 when we've got temperatures in the 60s and 70s and 80s. I don't know what'll happen when it gets warmer. So I realized with that trip, I've got to be really careful with watching the battery. And my first thought was, we can probably get down to 50 or 60 miles and then fill up. Well, now that we've completed the trip, I don't let it go below 100. And now that we're in midwinter, the capacity is right at 200 miles. So what we learned is find a charging station every 100 miles and plan to spend 20, 25 minutes every 2 hours charging. So that was a big shift in the way we road trip, where, you know, you get in the car, you drive, you run out of gas, you fill up, and then you keep driving. Now, we're not road warriors. We don't do that very often anymore. But when we have to get from a point to another point, we have the capacity to do it. We no longer have the capacity to do it.
So that's an hour and a half between stops. That's a good time to take a stretch anyway.
Yeah, it's actually 2 hours between stops because we don't drive interstates. We stay on back roads. So we drive 50 to 60 miles an hour and thoroughly enjoy going through small towns and stopping. So we're not in a great rush to begin with. But every 2 hours, we have to stop for about a half hour.
So just for a little clarification as far as mapping out chargers, and I've done this before, and I may be doing it again for a long trip that may actually get close to western Nebraska. So these are level 3 high-speed chargers that you're factoring into your stops, correct?
That's right. And what I've learned is that Google Maps and a number of apps have maps of where the chargers are. And the problem with the apps is they don't overlap. You really have to look at all of them to find as many chargers as you can. And then the landscape is changing so quickly. There are still chargers that you find that were just not on a map. But we would spend every evening when we stopped plotting a route, finding high-speed chargers, seeing how far we got. We'd have some options, and then every time we stopped to charge, we would pick our next charger, put it right into the GPS, so the GPS would take us right to the next charger. Hmm. And we had a couple of crazy situations where we had thought we had done everything right, but the funniest one was a motel. There's some wonderful motel websites, and all of the motel chains now have an EV charging filter. So you can figure out which motels have chargers, and for the most part, they don't charge for them.
Wow.
You're first come, first serve, and you pull in, you plug in. It's a level 2 charger, but a level 2 charger is perfect for charging overnight. It's fully charged in the morning, and you're ready to go. And I called one motel in Ottumwa, Iowa.
I know where Ottumwa is. I've been there. Yeah.
You've been there. Well, I can tell you where all the chargers are in Ottumwa.
Train goes through there. Yep.
That's right.
It does.
That's
yeah.
right. We called a Best Western. They were listed as having an EV charger, and I asked, do you have an EV charger? Yes. Will the connector fit a non-Tesla automobile? Yes, we have non-Tesla automobiles out there frequently. Thank you very much. I made a reservation, and we showed up. What I didn't ask, stupid me, is I neglected to ask if it worked. It was on the fritz. And the desk clerk was completely nonplussed by it. He said, oh, yeah, it's not working right now. And I just, you know, what can you do? You can roll your eyes and go, God, I just didn't ask the right question.
Hmm.
And from there, now I'm starting to worry because we had let ourselves get lower than we wanted, knowing that we had a charger at the motel. We zipped from there to the local car dealer that had a charger. And it was late on a Saturday afternoon. They were closed on Sunday, and they literally would not let us use their high-speed charger. They said that was just for them. We could use their level 2 charger. And a level 2 charger for an hour would provide virtually nothing. And fortunately, we found a motel, a Hilton, that had a charger that didn't cost us anything and was perfectly comfortable. So everything worked out just fine. But we had a couple of moments.
Yeah.
Where we weren't sure if we were going to be able to make it.
So would you call that, that was bad luck, but would you call that, that's maybe a little bit different than range anxiety, where you're on the road, and actually, I think you were experiencing range anxiety during that northbound trip on I-87, where you saw the range going down faster than you anticipated. I always advise folks, when you're mapping something out, to say, okay, I have plenty of those apps that you're talking about, to have a backup plan so that at each place, okay, we think this one's operational, it looks good, but if it's not there, what else exists? Now, you guys did that. You found another hotel. Were you able to cancel your first hotel and go to the other?
Everybody was accommodating.
All right.
And I agree with you completely, and my strategy now is I don't want the range capacity to get below 100 miles. So once we're at 100 miles, that is red light time, get a charge, because we never came across a place where we couldn't get a charge with.
Is he still there? Henry, are you there?
I'm there.
Yeah.
Ken, we lose you?
Well, I could talk a little bit if you need to. Do you need to redial him?
Yeah. Why don't you talk about some of your experiences?
That'll take the rest of the show. Definitely. No, I'll just talk for a minute or so, and we'll get Ken back on. You are listening to Green Zine. Henry's going to try to reconnect with Ken, who's got plenty more stories, hopefully, that don't make you too anxious. We are at 27 minutes now before the hour of noon when we bring you Democracy Now! Just to to do a tangential off of Ken's comment about 100 miles, never getting below 100 miles, people's opinions are across the board as far as how much you want to let your range go down or how much you want to top off at whatever the top amount of kilowatts that your EV will take. If you do get into the habit of sort of playing a little dangerously and letting your battery get low, like, I left it in the driveway and I had 10 or 20 miles left, and that's fine. I'm going to charge it overnight, so no big deal. But doing that, or always topping off your battery, and we had a guest on here, a good friend of mine named Chris Leister, who's got experience with two or three different EVs, is that you will reduce the battery life of the big battery that comes with your EV. In other words, going to the extremes of high and low on a regular basis. A battery that may have lasted 10, 12 years will start to depreciate in its range at sooner. You might only get 8 or 9 years before it's time to hopefully switch out the battery, not necessarily get rid of the whole vehicle, but to get a new battery, which will be pricey, but it'll be hopefully different and a lot less potentially toxic than the batteries that are on the market today. I will see if Henry's had any luck getting Ken. He's going to have to call me because I think, did I have to take him out of the call? Let me see. Are you still there, Henry?
On.
You're on. Okay.
I'm here. Ken's here.
Okay, good.
Good.
All right. Let's continue on.
I think where I was just setting a target of never letting the range go below 100 miles,
yep,
just so you've got those fallbacks. And you can always make it to the next charger if you need to.
Yeah. And, you mentioned when you were talking to a couple of different hotels, and I think that's a great idea if you're going to spend the night somewhere. And even if it's a level 2, but you're there for 10 or 12 hours, you're going to pick up, and if nobody else is on the system, you might pick up 150 miles overnight, depending on...
It charged completely on a level 2 overnight.
Okay, excellent.
The car that I'm looking at is supposed to be 8 hours on level 2 will buy you a full charge.
Yeah.
What I did here at my home on Vermont Electric Co-op system is they don't have time of day rates, so I don't save a lot of money by when I charge, but they give me a deduction. I think it's $100 a year or something like that for not charging during peak hours. So I just programmed my charging app not to program between 3 p.m. and 10 p.m. So it automatic. I plug it in whenever I park. It automatically starts charging at 10 p.m. and it's always full by morning.
Yeah.
Green Mountain Power, a little bit similar in that the lowest rates, I think, for Green Mountain Power are between 9 p.m., might be 10 p.m., and 7 a.m. the next time. And you can, most current EVs, you can program to turn on the charger at a certain time. One cautionary note, and I'm sure, Ken, you have a lot more cautionary notes, is that if you live off the grid and don't have Wi-Fi, and this specifically goes to Green Mountain Power, they have a lot of incentives that are based on the consumer being attached to Wi-Fi and being able to interact directly with their meter, directly with Green Mountain Power, as far as your EV charging goes. If you are off the grid, some of those benefits will not necessarily apply to you. For instance, they'll give you a level 2 charger when you buy an EV. That's something you can get. But if you're not tied to Green Mountain Power, you might not get that free charger from them.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment. I guess I haven't really thought about it explicitly, but it is kind of mind-boggling how Wi-Fi dependent this entire system is.
Yeah. Well, a quick example of that.
Charging at home or charging at a public charger.
Yeah, yesterday I plugged in. Henry's aware of these chargers that are just outside our studio here on the campus of Vermont Law and Graduate School, and those are free chargers, and they are getting much more extensive use in the last year and a half than when they were first launched. I got an email, so you don't have to pay. You get a card or you get a code, and you get in there, and you can, you know, people don't park overnight or anything, and it's a pretty good deal because the law school is paying for it. But there was going to be a system upgrade that was going to occur at 10:30 Eastern time yesterday in the morning, and even though I was plugged in for the middle part of the day, I knew that, well, I'm at least going to get a charge till 10:30, and it's not like when the charger went off that it came back on. So basically, for those 3 or 4 hours after 10:30, no charging. But they're pretty good about. Do you have any favorite apps that you depend on more than others, Ken?
No.
Okay.
I depend on all of them, and I have found every single one of them has its own idiosyncrasy.
Gotcha.
Probably 3 or 4 of them I had to call the charging company to figure out how to use the charger. Because some of them it's a tap, some of them it's a tap from Apple Wallet, some of them it's a credit card. And some of the situations I ran into, a couple of them, I was a very quick learner, but you can't get the charging connector out of the automobile. It gets stuck in there. They're locked.
Oh, no.
It's like getting the washing machine lid open when it's locked. You know, you got to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And in my case, I finally figured it out. You lock the car and then unlock it and click the key fob several times, and it will automatically disengage the lock on the connector. But that moment when you're sitting there with a very cold wind blowing and your hands freezing and you can't get the damn thing out of the car, it's just a little disconcerting.
So how many months have you owned that car now? How new is it?
3.5.
Yeah. And are you beginning to get feeling that the world of driving an EV is okay after all?
Very much so. From going through the freakouts to starting to enjoy the pace and realizing there really are a lot of chargers out there once you know how to find them. And we had some great conversations around it. We met some super nice people. And now I really can't imagine, except for very long road warrior destination to destination road trips, I can't imagine driving anything except an EV. It is such a comfortable automobile. The acceleration, the quietness, the sense of solidness. And I'm very excited about watching how the technology evolves over the next decade or two.
So you haven't been on it
at it long enough to have any perspective on how many of the chargers are broken down and whether that's improving. But maybe Todd can comment on this from actually doing it. I read in the press that there is quite an emphasis to try to clean that up, and that the people who are using the chargers are doing a responsible job of reporting on the app whether
that's what I found. On the app, it will tell you if it's working or not, and that was pretty reliable. The app will also tell you at the moment that you look at the app how many of them are in use, so you know if they're all in use or there's some empty ones. Of course, in the 10 minutes it takes you to get there, that can change very easily.
Yeah.
The one that I came across that was the most disturbing is one at a public charger, I think, with four charging stations, and they had been vandalized. The connectors had been cut off of all of them. So somebody just went in, and all I can imagine is somebody was furious at these woke eco freaks who want to drive these, who want to do away with petroleum, and said, "I'll show them," and just lopped them off.
Wow!
Probably $5 worth of scrap copper in each one of those jobs.
Yeah.
You could put.
But, you know, anything can happen. They don't work. They've been vandalized. They're, you know, anything.
Yeah, you could get a bumper sticker, Ken, that says "a caution: woke eco freak ahead." And then people will stay away from your car. It is interesting that some of them don't work. And I think that if you do take the time, particularly if you do start doing long-distance trips, and there are ways to make comments about, I'll see that someone, there may be a history of comments about a charger that seems like, hey, that's right on my way, that's had a lot of trouble over several months. So you're kind of on notice that this may not be the best charger to depend on. Another thing, and this is where the math comes in, and I am not so good at computing a rate of kilowatt hour speed that let's say a high speed charger is putting in, and as far as the dollars and cents that are involved, but the charging rates, the financial charging rates, can be all across the board, anywhere from one that you mentioned, and I believe that was probably a level two that was free. I did used to use a level three that was free. That's very rare, but that is no longer in service, so I won't tell anybody about that one. But to know that there are ways that, you know, there could be overcharged, and then in a municipal situation, which we're starting to see, where towns here in Vermont, and since we broadcast from Vermont, we'll just stay within the Green Mountain State, are looking into installing chargers, and they can manage the pricing of the, you know, per hour charge. But also they could, maybe municipal employees, there would be a separate setting where they might be able to charge their vehicles at a much lower rate or for free. So it is kind of a wild west world out there, but there could be hopefully some benefits here as we move forward.
We had very good luck and very bad luck at auto dealerships. There were a few that were very gracious and, oh, sure, just plug in, charge up. We're delighted you're doing what you're doing. And others where the charging was 65 cents a kilowatt hour, which is a pretty high rate. It's more, a little bit more than gasoline.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we paid across the map on those. One of the most interesting strategies that I actually wrote about in the blog is, and we went to a public charger that was owned by a municipality. We found a bunch of those, and the municipal chargers tend to be very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to one where the charging price was zero. The idle time price was $3 an hour. And it made me think of a Marx Brothers routine where Chico is explaining how much he charges to play music at an event, and he charges more to rehearse than to play, and if he doesn't play, then it costs even more. And as he said, you can't afford it if I don't play. And all I could think was the Marx Brothers at that moment, because the charging was free, but leaving your vehicle hooked up to the charger when it wasn't charging was expensive. And that struck me as such a great strategy for keeping the deadbeats off of the charger after their charge.
So during the time that you were charging, though, they did not charge you the $3. Like if it's a 2-hour time limit, yeah. But only
the
when
app told me they weren't charging, but when I was all finished, they did, but at a very reasonable rate.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah, interesting.
I think having to pay more and more for what you don't do, that needs to happen all the way through the ecological world, and maybe
good point.
We'll sort things out.
Exactly. Well said. Yeah.
So, in our notes, I found another blog on, and it's in the notes under blog on tripping, and it's someone who had done an extensive trip. Jen Zach, I think is the person's name. That's in the web address, and she tracked all of her expenses and what the level three, the high speed chargers, were doing and how fast her car was filling up, and that taking it up that first 80% happens fast, but it's really slow if you want to be on a level three charger and take it all the way to 100, and apparently not all that good for the battery, which is why it slows down.
Yeah, I did not have that experience. Mine really? Seemed to keep charging at the same rate. I tried not to charge much more than 80 or 85%, but what confused me, and I absolutely don't understand, as I was in a Walmart parking lot. Walmart, by the way, has been great at installing high-speed chargers in their parking lots. And the only problem with them is that so many people use them. That's
yes.
the only place we really had to wait. But four high-speed chargers, all same capacity, watching my car and the cars on both sides of me charge. And they were apparently the same, but all three were charged at dramatically different rates.
Wow.
I have no idea why that is. Somebody needs to explain that to me.
Well, that's a vehicle thing, and I put some notes in the blog about different levels of charging, and that's one of the comments that I made in there was that when you're choosing an EV, if you are going to plan on doing a lot of long-distance driving, you can charge a lot faster if you choose one with a fast something that keeps up the high speed. And in my situation, I do very little need to. I very little need to fill up my car from a public source. I can do it at the houses that I'm at. And in fact, in my Burlington location, where I frequently arrive after having driven, say, 100 miles to get here, I arrive here and I'm likely not to even move the car for the next 2 days. And if I just simply plug it into a 110-volt extension cord, I'll have a full charge coming out of that.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go the real simplistic route for my Burlington location.
Have you calculated if there's a difference in the amount of electricity you need if you plug into a level 2 or a 110?
The level 2 is much faster. I think I'm not sure, but I'm assuming that, maybe incorrectly, that the number of kilowatts it takes to charge your battery will be virtually identical.
That's what I would think, too. So the charge, the cost, would be the same no matter what.
I would agree. I think we've reached consensus on that. Hey, we've just got just over 10 minutes left in the show. I want to thank you, Ken Lee. Henry, I'll leave you with some remarks. And then, Henry, I do have some questions for you about this trip to Boston. But, Ken, I really appreciate you sharing your blog information.
It was a pleasure speaking with you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care.
It's great. And appreciate your being a public promoter, but also truth teller about
we need more of those. Yeah.
My pleasure, and I hope.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day, Ken. All right, Henry. Yeah, before we leave the EV front, I have to decline your invitation to go with you to Boston to pick up. I think you might be getting an EV. Have you mapped out your first trip back from Boston all the way to Burlington?
No, but I know I have to charge once on the way. Theoretically, my car, if it was fully charged, would make it, but it would limp in. And I think with the cold temperatures that are forecast, I definitely wouldn't.
Yeah, what is the maximum range that's attached to the vehicle you're getting?
I think I'm a 100 and let's see. I should have that.
Ooh, hopefully that more than 200.
235 miles.
Okay.
Something like that. 250 yeah. miles. That's kind of zone.
Right.
And,
so
I did not buy. I bought on price and ground clearance, and I've driven the vehicle and I like the way it feels and handles. But I really being on a dirt road, I did a lot of damage to my old car, and so I've gotten some additional height, and as you go up, they tend to be a lot less efficient. So
yeah.
I'm sort of compromising. I've got some added height, but not lots more.
So I think on your drive back, there is a rest stop on, I believe it's on 93, which you've got to take.
Yeah,
I think you'll find some high-speed charger, or you could go to that one that I think Ken has been to. He mentioned that Walmart is, pretty progressive. In West Leb, there will be people there, but maybe at the time of the day, you'll get lucky. And of course, Henry, you can just come on down here to the law school, warm up here in the studio, and then once you're back into out of range anxiety,
that's a level two.
That's what I mean. You'll need to spend some time. Maybe you'll have to have a meal and hang out for a while. But
the Walmarts, are they level twos or level?
No, those will be level three. Yeah, there's some Rivian chargers down at that same exit, but there's a bunch of them, but none of them are high speed. It's very odd that part of it. So it's a brave new charging world out there. Yep.
Yes, I've really jumped into the deep end of the pool. I have a steep learning curve here. So,
well,
all right.
Good luck with that. Hey, let's move on to a couple of other things. I do want to get this word out locally. We've been, and of course, people are driving their EVs locally. And here's a name that we know. She's probably listening right now. I think a steadfast listener to Green Zine. This is from today's White River Valley Herald. You can find this story on page A5. It is headlined. It's written by local correspondent Joe Lavasser. Hey, maybe she should be on WordStream. Royalton Select Board okays flood hazard ordinance. But further down in the story, Kathy Hassey and Gene Krause, who we know from his work on the Bethel Energy Committee, spoke to the board. This is the Royalton Select Board. About how energy efficiency in the village could include a thermal energy network, a utility-wide network to share heat, which captures heat that comes out of buildings, such as what is generated by freezers and by water entering sewers. This energy can be captured and put back into the system. No one knows how much setting up the system will cost, however, without doing an engineering study. There is a possibility to finance such a system through federal and state resources. Well, don't know about federal, but certainly maybe the state, with the more participation, meaning the more feasible would be the project. Other towns in our area are talking about looking into thermal energy networks. I know that Woodstock is maybe a little bit ahead of the curve. And Krause said he would be willing to bring in people from 350 Vermont who could talk more about it. So we'll see. Maybe a thermal energy network is coming to a town near you.
Yes, indeed. We've talked about them on the air before. Basically, if you do an air heat pump, and the air temperature that you're trying to warm or throw away your heat into, if that air temperature is, say, 10 degrees out, but you can have the place you're throwing your heat away be at 55 degrees, the efficiency of the system does something like doubling. It becomes very, very efficient to run heat pumps when you have a place to kind of get rid of that cold that is at a higher temperature. But it pretty much only works when you have a group of people doing it. It could be a housing development, or it could be a main street, but it doesn't make it's marginal for a single home. I shouldn't say it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and more information, and we do appreciate the notes that we get from Jared Duvall, who's the head of the Vermont Energy Action Network, and I'm looking at their newsletter for January, and they do have a presentation, and it's coming up in Montpelier, actually live presentation at Hugo's Bar and Grill. Now, I have not been to Hugo's.
Right.
Maybe you've been there. In Montpelier, I have a feeling it might be where the Black Door was upstairs. 4:30 to 6:30, this is coming up on Thursday, February the 6th. So it's coming up pretty soon. And what it's going to be about, let me just jump down here. They are hosting an in-person Leveraging Change speaker series. So there will be a number of these. And the first one is on February 6th, Zero Emission Heating Equipment Standards, an emerging strategy to reduce pollution from buildings. And if you go to the Energy Action Network, you can find out more about this presentation and register. So good way to get educated there.
Yeah. So I have I realize with your saying, I had put out an email to Todd. Did he want to ride to Boston with me when I buy this this car? And I'm planning on taking a bus down there.
Good idea.
But it's possible that if one of you listeners wants to come along, you're going to land up driving my car back instead of the EV. So it's may not be all that interesting a project, but there's at the show links, there's a way of emailing me, and please do that if people have other thoughts about the show and what things we should be covering.
Yeah. Well, I can guarantee this, that if you want to help Henry go down to Boston, that's a ride share that's going to be very entertaining, no matter what happens. Where will you be leaving from, Henry? You're going to be catching a bus from?
Well, if my problem is my bank is in White River Junction, and I have to personally go to the bank before I go to Boston.
Uh-huh.
So that means that I may drive down to the bank tonight in order to do the paperwork I have to do at the bank, drive back to Burlington, and then take a bus from Burlington to Boston tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
So that's the disadvantage of not banking locally.
So I didn't know whether you were, because you're going to be hanging on to your used Prius, whether that was going to live locally here at your place in Tunbridge or whether that was headed back to Burlington.
Well, I'm only hanging on to it so that I can clean it up, do some work on the rust, and then put it out on the private market.
Okay.
Cost-wise, if you just look at the cost of running an electric vehicle versus running my Prius gets such good gas mileage that, especially when you take depreciation into effect, it's about an even split with driving an EV, but I just can't bear to be putting gasoline in the tank and burning it. So I'm jumping to the EV because of that.
Okay, well, Henry, I applaud. You hear that? I'm applauding Henry here live on the air, and I wish you luck tomorrow. Hey, Henry, a couple really quick things. One, we definitely need to reemphasize that we can't carry this kind of – do you think this is unique programming? I do, without the help of entities like Soliflect and Bail, Royal Trailworks, Daniel Leibowitz, the Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company right here on the Commons in South Royalton, Solarfest. Those dates for Solarfest, August 8th through the 10th in Brandon, Vermont. White River Land Collaborative and Wit and Grit. Check out the Herald and read what Representative Larry Sakowitz from up in Randolph has to say about the clean heat standard history. Very interesting story. And we're looking forward to hanging out with you next week here on Green Zine at WFBR-LP South Royalton. And safe driving and successful charging.
Yes, thank you so much. And maybe next week we'll be looking at Greenland.